Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Austin, and this week, got a topic for you guys that I think is close to the heart, or maybe close to the ego, rather, for all of us. And we're going to be talking specifically about training and the ruts that we fall into on the range. There's some behaviors that we can adjust. There's some bad habits we may not even realize that we have, right? There's a lot of things that lead to it, but inevitably, we all end up in those ruts. We end up in those grooves where we get very comfortable. And when we get comfortable, we stagnate and then we are unable to make the forward progress that many of us would like to see on the range. And actually, a lot of this can be applied in principle, at least to other skill sets and other areas of opportunity, right? Where we'd like to develop ourselves, skill sets we'd like to hone and build and advance, right? So it could be things like field craft work, right? Where you have to practice things like some things that are even super basic, like tying knots, right? It's a super simple thing that a lot of people are very good at. It's not me. I'm not one of them, but you can be very good at with some practice and you got to stay up on it. Some of that stuff you don't forget, but a lot of it, if there's different knots for different things, to tie up shelters, to tie things for anchor points and things like that, there are different knots that are built for different purposes. Different applications, right, that are going to lend themselves to certain scenarios. Well, you're never ever going to get better at some of those things unless you push yourself outside that comfort window. You know, maybe there's three you use all the time for everything, but you're never going to really get better at it as a concept, right, unless you force yourself to change in some way, shape, or form. And maybe, you know, obviously, I think tying a knot is probably an oversimplification of the overall problem that we're looking at here. But it's really easy to understand when you put it in simple terms that a kindergartner can understand. Hey, I'm bad at tying knots, Dad. Okay, how are you going to get better at tying knots? By doing it more. So, in that same light, how are we going to fix the issues that we have for ourselves within our training? When we're not, it's not that we're getting worse, we're just not getting better. And we've talked about this, several times on the podcast, is if you're not moving forward, you are inevitably moving backwards because the rest of the world doesn't stop moving, doesn't stop spinning for you or whatever. And I don't want to sound callous and insensitive, whatever excuses and whatever issues you have. I mean, we all suffer through a lot of different stuff in our personal lives. I certainly am going through my fair share of, and maybe even more than my fair share of burdens and struggles right now. It's not something I talk about all the time, but like they're there. We all have those issues. We all have those problems. I think finding constructive ways to deal with that and move past it is one of the healthiest and best things, right, that we can do for ourselves, both inside and outside of our hobbies, our passions, right? The things in life which fill our time and absorb our energy. So I'm going to share my thoughts on that this week. It should be a good discussion, I think, or I guess not really a discussion if it's just me talking to me, although I guess it probably could be in some insane sort of way, but I'm going to pontificate. It's a good word. It's a $5 word. You guys look that one up for yourselves. You're welcome. You can bust that out in the workplace. People are going to think that you went to some place really good for school and you didn't. You just listened to a really, really mid-grade podcast about preparedness. But I digress. You guys, before we get into the topic for the week, this is a sponsored podcast. We have some really, really cool companies that, I mean, it's just awesome that they work with us. They support what Prepared Mindset is all about. They're all about the mission here. They support our goals. They are, you know, in favor of the dreams and great things that you know we're looking to achieve here. And I want to tell you guys about them so that you can go check them out for yourselves and pick up some rad gear. Support the companies that support us, and that starts with our friends over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, if you're looking to get into night vision, and you should be right now, if you think that just because the election's over that the spicy activities are a thing of the past or a worry of the past, I think you might be wrong. The weather is just now breaking, and it is still, in my belief, it is prime time. Not still, but it is now prime time for night vision season. The days are still pretty long. It gets dark at 7:30 or so, and it stays dark. So you can get out and train with night vision, use night vision, maximize your experience with your night vision. You guys can head over to customnightvision.com. and check out everything that they have for sale there. So whether that's a single tube unit like the PVS-14, it's commonly and highly regarded as the starting point for all night vision usage. They have a ton of those options in stock from different tubes, you know, whether it's white phosphor, green phosphor, from Elbit, from Photonis, from L3, right? You can have different optics and lens choices. So, you know, you want, you know, just the baseline mil-spec Singaporean glass. You want to go up to something fancier. I think they just released a video on their YouTube channel. You guys can go ahead and over and check that out. Kevin talking about the 50-degree field of view lenses from DTNVS. The guys over at Custom Night Vision, they stock those as well. If you are looking for dual-tube night vision, maybe you're an experienced user, you're looking to upgrade, they stock a whole healthy lineup, very healthy, of dual devices such as the DTNVS or the MH1 from Lowlight Innovations or any of the AB night vision housings like the adjustable gain version of the RNVG or articulating RNVG, excuse me, all kinds of good stuff. I can't even keep track of it. There is so much that Custom has in stock to offer you guys. Again, it is customnightvision.com. Use the Insight chat function located in the lower right-hand corner of the webpage. You can reach out. You can talk to one of the team members. They are there to provide the most transparent purchase experience for you, their customers. So big thanks to Custom Night Vision, you guys. Also want to say thank you to our friends at American Defense Manufacturing. Their website is admfg.com. I actually just was able to touch base with them last week. Had a great conversation with Austin. Great name, great dude, over at ADM, and hear about all the good stuff they have going on there, including their Mod 1 series of rifles. So if you guys are looking to get into a quality rifle, maybe the Mod 2 series is a little bit rich for your blood, maybe it's a little bit too out of your reach price range-wise, check out the Mod 1. They cut a few corners, and I hate even saying cut corners because they really didn't. They just went with a little bit lower grade of a part in some areas, like the charging handle is the cheaper version of the Radian Raptor. Still very, very good. Very, very capable, but it's going to save you money. They go with their 1-in-7 twist barrel. They don't include a fancy muzzle device because maybe you don't need that, right? It saves you money and it puts a quality blaster in your hands. Tremendous company making some absolutely outstanding products, you guys. ADMMFG.com. Go check out all of their rifles, their quick ship rifles. So whether it's the AR pistols, the AR-10s, the AR-15 platform, whole heck of a lot more. ADMMFG, you guys, it's American Defense Manufacturing. thank you as well to the team over at Orion Training Group, you guys. Orion is heading up here to Michigan in actually about 2 months' time now. I'm really excited. We were T-minus 60 days, actually, I think it's 59 at the time of this recording. So it's exciting. We're getting closer and closer. They're coming up here to put on a 2-day structure clearance course, and they do this kind of thing all over the nation, folks. Whether you're in Texas, Washington, yes, up here in Michigan, they're doing a SWAT school in Indiana. I know they offer classes all over the South, you know, whether it's Louisiana or I think they've been to Florida and everything in between. They're going out to Arizona this year. You guys can head over to OrionTrainingGroup.com and check out the entire course calendar they have for the year. And potentially, if you're trying to do what we did and get a class out to your location, hey, reach out to Jared. He's more than happy to talk to you guys and get something on the books, potentially for the end of the year, maybe next year. A lot of these you know, in-demand instructors, they book up well in advance. You can read up on the whole course selection list there on the website, as well as hear about all of the cadre members over at Orion. Some very, very passionate and very talented instructors. You guys could do far, far worse with your money than taking a class with OTG. Again, it's OrionTrainingGroup.com. And last here, certainly not least to me, is our good friends over at 100 Concepts. You guys, do good, be dangerous, live free. That is their company motto, and they make outstanding products. You guys, if they weren't outstanding, you wouldn't see every Tom, Dick, and Harry all over the internet jumping out there with their fancy-dancy 3D printer making cheap imitations of their products, but they're out there. They make outstanding products, you guys. 100concepts.com is the website. Go check it out for yourself. Check out, I mean, man, where do we start? They have the caps for the lights, for scopes. If you want something a step above, you can go with the ProCap series, and what that does is it takes that hex pattern anti-reflective device and combines it with a scope cap so you can get the best of both. You can flip off that scope cap and not have to worry about the reflection because of that ARD. And if that clouds your sight picture, you can actually flip the whole device up without losing it and still being able to retain it. It's a super cool idea. All of that and a heck of a lot more, you guys. The website is 100concepts.com. go over to the website today, check it out, pick yourself up some new gear, whether it's their Chemlite kit, the Fife Loop, their Helmet Scrim, their Pack Scrim, a whole bunch more, you guys. Fantastic company, staffed by some absolutely fantastic human beings. Can't do much better than that. So thank you to all those companies. They're totally rad, and they support everything that we're about here at Prepared Mindset, you guys. Okay, I'm struggling. You guys have to bear with me. The weather here is awesome because it's on the upswing, but this week we've had, I think we're having two separate, from like Saturday to Saturday, we're having two separate 20-degree swings up and down. So it'll be like 50, and then it's going to jump up to 70, and then down to like the high 40s, and then up to the high 60s, and man, it totally beats the crap out of me, and you might hear some of that coming through in the audio recording. So I'm going to go ahead right now, and I'm going to apologize in advance if at some point this becomes a little bit annoying. I do have a delicious Killcliff here. Shout out to Killcliff, by the way, you guys. Not paid, not sponsored, but they do donate some money to the Navy SEAL Foundation, and these CBD drinks are outstanding. I got the Flaming Joe right now. Really enjoy that. But if you are listening and you are from Killcliff, if you guys want to hook it up with a free case, I would not say no, although you did get rid of my favorite flavor. So that hurts my heart just a little bit, but I digress. This week we're talking about training ruts. So breaking, good Lord, it's going to be a long episode, breaking bad habits when we get out onto the flat range, or I mean just the range in general, training in general, but man, how we fall into these ruts, we build bad habits. How do we spot them? How do we fix them? Man, sometimes it's really, really difficult, and we can't, if you're a singleton, you're going to be at even more of a disadvantage. As a singleton, you can't necessarily always spot the things that you're doing wrong, unless you videotape yourself a lot of reps, which is initially why a lot of guys, a lot of shooters, you used to see them go out there and they would bring tripods and cameras, things like that. You can video yourself so you can actually see things like maybe extraneous motion in your draw stroke or in your reload. Like, hey, you know, Josh caught me on this on the range all the time, is that I'd go to start my reload and I would wait for the mag to start falling out of my handgun before I would move my support hand, which isn't doing anything at that time, move it over to start grabbing and indexing that new fresh mag off my belt. That's the kind of like little things that you probably can't feel necessarily, but can be spotted by somebody watching. It's why you look at some of the highest caliber professional athletes out there, like Tiger Woods, for example, who's a little bit old and busted and washed at this point. Yes, I understand. And has cheated on like all of his wives and stuff. So he's kind of a terrible human being. But if you take all that and put it aside, he is still one of the most prolific golfers in the history of the game. And he had a performance coach. And that coach was probably not nearly the golfer that he is. However, he was probably a smart individual who is a good teacher and could spot those things, help him work through some of those issues and problems, those hitches in his game, if you will, and help him develop that. That's one of the easiest ways. If you don't have somebody with you, is to A, video yourself, but B, get out on the range with a partner, somebody whose skill set matches yours or hopefully is better, and they can help spot a lot of this stuff. That's the biggest way. I mean, guys go out there, and if you're just going out there and running the same drills to build the same level of confidence, but never actually surpassing your level of competency, your level of performance, you don't have anybody out there to push you, you're going to fall into that rut. That, like, by definition, you're going to do the same thing over and over. You're just going to be spinning your tires, you know, one reload ones, you know, a draw from the holster at 7 yards, you know, two shots to the A zone, maybe it's three shots, whatever. If you're doing the same things over and over, you're going to get the same things you've always gotten, the same results that you've always gotten. So, you know, when you leave, and how do you know if you've gotten there, right? How do you know that you've gotten to that point where you're stuck in the rut? Because a lot of us don't think that we are. You know, we, for better or for worse, a lot of people lack the introspective piece of their brain to identify, hey, I know I can do better, and I know I'm hitting this wall right now. The tough part is if you're in your 20s listening to this, or you're, you know, early mid-20s. So I would say if you're 28 or maybe, you know, less, the frontal cortex of your brain is still not fully developed. So while you think you have all the right answers to everything all the fucking time, I will be one of the first, hopefully, or hopefully not one of the first, actually, now I'm thinking about it, to tell you that you don't have all the answers, and the introspection does take a lot of time to build and to hone. So, You ever leave the range feeling like you're just going through the motions? Question mark. If you get to that point, if you're starting to feel a little bit unfulfilled, that could just be a bad range day. Like, hey, I didn't really perform the best. You know, that doesn't mean you're necessarily in a rut. And in fact, if you don't feel great about the range day, it may feel like that may be a good indicator that you're not in a rut. It may mean that you're pushing yourself in the ways you need to be pushed. And that's why your performance was not where you would like it to be, because you're shooting for goals and performance standards that are above and beyond what you're used to or capable of on a regular and repeated basis. That might be a good indicator. But if you're leaving every range day, maybe 3, 4, 5, 7 of them in a row, whatever it is, right? And you're going, man, this just feels like, you know, I don't know that I'm getting anything out of this. I've had those. I've had CQB sessions where I leave and go, man, I don't know that this group of guys is it for me. You know, I don't know if these guys are really as dedicated to this as I am. I've had range sessions where I leave and go, well, that was fun because we fucked around and we, you know, made the jokes and everything. It was like a good, you know, male bonding experience type of day on the range. But I don't know that I walked away from this a better shooter at all. And that's okay. But that's a huge, obviously, identifier behind asking yourself that question. Am I just going through the motions? Have I gotten any better today? You know, we have from time to time, we have some large group range days. And it's really cool because we get like 16 to 20 guys together at the outdoor range that's semi-local to me. It's about 35, 40 minutes away, right? And it's great because you get to get this huge group of dudes together and you're running these big relay style drills that we put together typically in advance. And everybody, you know, can run through it. We can see everybody shoot. You can give little pointers here and there, but largely that's not really the day that you get better. Like you might fix one or two things. If somebody like Josh is really great about hanging out at the firing line with the timer and giving guys little pieces of input as they're coming and going, like, hey, widen your stance or make sure you're leaning into that gun more or whatever, right? The case may be. And yeah, you might walk away with one of those little nuggets of wisdom. You're like, man, that's really good. I'm going to work that into my practice going forward. But large scale, if you think you're going to get, you know, double digit reps on each drill, you're not. It is more of an audit day than anything else. And with that in mind, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do those things. It means that you have to just know that that's not the day you're getting better. That's the day where you're kind of just evaluating and validating skills. Maybe you have a good day. Maybe you have a bad day. I don't know, right? But it's not going to be a day where you're going to be out there really fixing problems, really hammering out, you know, reps. And if you're at the point where you don't, you know that you think that you're stuck, right? And you want to try and address it, right? Like you find yourself, hey, I'm always shooting these same drills. I'm prioritizing my speed over accuracy or vice versa, right? You're very comfortable and you don't know how to push yourself, right, towards some of those, I guess, those weak spots, right? That's, you've fallen in this rut. The large group range days aren't going to fix that because it's not fair to the larger group there to take the time to address specifically what you want to work on. And that's, I mean, totally fine, right? You just need to know that in advance and plan accordingly for your individual sessions. What you should try and do if you're really trying to build some skills, break some habits, right, is look at everything with an objective lens and try to A, plan your session in advance. Hey, here's the things I want to work on, right? And in no particular order, right? This is what I'm going to work on, and set yourself, or at least try to, I think, you know, mix up your drills. And if you don't know what to change it to, you know, cause that's the thing, like we get out on the, I've been out to the range, right, with the guys, we get out there and okay, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to start with? I don't know. And you know, guys don't have this idea figured out in advance. And we have done it multiple times in a row where it's like, dude, how the fuck do we keep getting out here to the range? And we don't know what we're fucking doing. Is it that hard, guys? You know, and at the same time, you're like, well, shit, I should probably have this figured out too, but I'm not going to say it. So if you're always shooting the same drills, change it up. Well, where can I get more drills? Well, okay, there's this thing. It's called the fucking internet. You can go look it up for one, but I also understand, you know, SMARM aside, right, that the internet can be misleading in a lot of ways as well, because you have a lot of guys out there that claim to be these master shooters. Some of which are, like, legitimately, they're masterclass shooters for, you know, IPSC or USPSA or whatever. but you have a lot of guys who claim to be master level shooters or, you know, master level tactical shooters. So they don't have the credential or title of, you know, grandmaster or master level or master class, whatever, right? They don't necessarily have that, but they're going to tell you, hey, this is the drill that you should work on for accuracy from the holster with your first round or first two rounds or something. Maybe not the best guys to be taking that advice from. I mean, I'm not to say that they couldn't be right, but just to be careful with who you're taking that input and advice from, because it may be less than accurate. Now, that said, you can go ahead and look up stuff. We just did a drill on the range. This is something that we've struggled to build in the last several sessions for at least with a focus on accuracy. We did the Mojo March Cold Start drill. So you set up the cones in a cross shape. In our instance, we did a T because we only had four cones. We didn't have five. And that's on me. I only had four of them. But regardless, right? So you start, we ran up to the center cone. It was three rounds with the carbine. We also did it with a handgun to the center of the target, so the A zone. And then you run to your right to the far out point, and you do two rounds to the head box. So whole head, not just the T zone, not just the credit card, but the whole head. Then you go back to the center, three more rounds to the A zone, run out to the left wing, two rounds to the head, back to center, three rounds to the A, run forward, two rounds to the head box, run back to the center point, and three rounds to the A zone. And again, we did this with carbine and with handgun. And this was a real attempt to not prioritize speed over accuracy or vice versa. That's a huge thing. I think sometimes we only worry about speed, and there's something to be said for pushing speed. There's also something to be said for maybe focusing less on your speed and more on your accuracy, but it has to be a balance. And this was something we don't do a ton of. You know, when we had done group range days in October and November, we did some running and moving in the relays, but we weren't timing them. And all the shooting was done on steel. And steel can be great, but steel can also be one of those things you fall into a rut with your accuracy building, because that A-zone steel is actually a little bit bigger than an A-zone and can be really, really forgiving when you're talking about grouping and, you know, you just barely wing the edge of it and it can, you know, oh, hey, that was a hit. So there's something to be said for switching up both the medium of your target, so steel or paper, as well as your focus and the kind of drill you're running. On the move creates a lot of stress, especially when you're moving back and forth rapidly at seven yard bursts. It, you know, move and stop, move and stop, move and stop. It's not a long sprint, stop and, you know, deep breath and get your two shots on target, go back on safe and sprint again. You're, you know, moving much more frequently, and it does kind of change things up a bit. It's not something we've done a ton in the past. And I think for that reason, we get very comfortable with running certain styles of drills within our training group. And that's okay. Like, everybody does it, right? And you see this with guys that are, you know, they'll stand static on the flat range and they'll put two or three targets up, or they'll put two or three pieces of steel out, and you'll see them run an L Prez or something, right? You know, and that used to be very popular several years ago. And then we figured out that guys weren't moving. You know, competition shooters were moving, right? Because that's built into how the competition circuits work and things, how the stages are built, is you have to move and lean out behind cover or lean under it or over it or whatever. You know, you guys know what I'm saying, right? But we were seeing guys who were, when we had this this dichotomy that used to exist, right, between, hey, you can't do that, this is the tactical space, go do that shit in the competition space. Now we've merged those two worlds. That dichotomy is no longer a thing. Or it shouldn't be, really. and we were seeing guys that weren't moving. So then it got really, really popular. And those of you that have been around for a while, man, you will remember how popular it was for every YouTube instructor to put out and post their quote unquote, and everybody called it the exact same fucking thing. I remember I used to laugh at it because I was like, this is all the same shit done exactly the same way, but it was like different because it was their version of the off the X drill. And, you know, you would, you know, put draw on your holster or draw and do a 180 and put four rounds on target. And then you would take a huge step to the right or left, do like your slide lock reload, and then step back, you know, step back to where you were and re-engage the target. And it was like, yeah, this is you. This simulates you getting off the X. And it was like, no, because if I'm quote unquote getting off the X, I'm going to take a hell of a lot more than one step. It's going to be like several fucking steps to get my fat Mexican ass out of the line of fire. And then once I get behind some kind of cover or concealment, I will go ahead and do my slide lock reload if I haven't already done it on the move. But This is the kind of thing that was popularized on the internet. So you saw a lot of people mimicking this and a lot of people going ahead and doing these things. And the reason that it became so popular is because some of these large traveling instructors back in the day, right, they could take a class of 40 people and have everybody take one step to the left or one step to the right together, and they can all imitate and mimic this, and they can get all these reps out of it over and over and over and over again. And the two instructors are making, you know, money hand over fist on this oversized class, and they're teaching you get off the X and creative fighting and adaptive combat and whatever, you know, fancy, flashy ninja name you gave your drills in your class. And ultimately, it wasn't really helping you all that much. Like, yes, the concept is sound in that it triggers you to start moving. Like, we used to do stuff like that when I was teaching marching band. When the kids had a direction change in the drill, we would have them arced up doing music stuff. If they had a direction change or a new move, they would take like one step forward and kind of like rock forward and then come back, and they'd keep marking time in place. And yes, for mental reinforcement of a choreographed production, that makes sense. But in a gunfight where it's not choreographed and you have no idea when you're moving, where you're moving, how you're moving, that kind of shit just doesn't work. And that's why you've largely seen that style of drill go away, because we've gotten better. You know, most of us have just adopted better tactics, better techniques. We start using, you know, grid drills or box drills or things like that, or whatever the case may be, right, to actually get people moving, to get them running, not just, you know, taking a step, because it gave this weird false sense of confidence, I think, to guys who are like 350 plus pounds that, yeah, I can get off the X quick enough because I can take one step. And that really, you know, isn't the case. So all that to say, like, be willing to, you know, be a little bit uncomfortable. But then let's also just talk about some of the ways you can take what you're doing. And if, you know, maybe you don't want to change necessarily what you're doing, but you need to find a new way to do it. How are you going to shake it up? There's a couple different ways, right? You can change your environment. I think it's really easy to get comfortable dry firing in your basement where there's no wind, there's no sunshine, it's not cold, it's not too hot, there's no rain, right? Here's a crazy concept. Go outside, you know, because there's a lot of guys that are, maybe not so much anymore, but there definitely used to be those guys that would put their phone down on the table there, a little tray at their indoor gun range locally. Excuse me, and take videos of that, like, oh yeah, I can do a one reload one fast as fuck. And they put that video up and, you know, they're great about it. And they feel like they're fine in the confines of that space, but it really isn't, you know, always that great. And if things are really, really rainy and wet and your gear is wet, that means your magazines are slick, your hand is covered in water. And guess what? If you're covered in water, so is all your kit. So you're not gonna be able to just wipe your hand off on your pant leg or on your shirt or whatever, because it's all soaked as well. So maybe, I don't advocate for you getting like super wild with this. Maybe you go out of your way to train in the rain more often. Maybe you find a way to simulate that. One of the things that I'll never forget, and I don't even know, this probably is not a good example, but I'm going to talk about it because it was something that was impactful. It's like one of those like core memories in shooting for me, was Chris Costa several years ago. If you guys don't know who Chris Costa is, he's a former Coast Guard guy, was one of the Magpul Dynamics instructors with Travis Haley back in the day. Like, really, I think was one of the dudes that pioneered and revolutionized tactical shooting for the masses. And he had just had a line, I think he like 250 Smith & Wesson M&P full-size guns. So I think it was the 5-inch M&Ps, like Gen 1, they'd just come out or whatever. And he had the guys over at ATEI, which I found out later is like downriver here in Michigan. They did all the custom work. They like did custom slide cuts and custom stippling. And he was being interviewed about this. And like, you know, you talk about the stippling, why you had them do this, because, you know, actually I still have my Gen 1 M&P. And I really, at the time, I really liked the factory rubber texture that came on the grips. And they had, you know, interchangeable back straps that were rubberized that you could take on and off depending on how thick or thin you wanted the grip to be. And Chris started talking about, you know, take a little container, you know, with some water in it, add some dish soap, like a good amount, then get it all over your hands. And, or actually might have even been with water. I think it was just dish soap, like get a good amount of dish soap on your hands, and rub it around. So that's kind of like the viscosity and feeling of blood, which I don't know, cause I've never been in a gunfight. I've never, been in one of those situations or scenarios, right, where you have to deal with something like that, thank God. But the point he was making, the challenge that he made, was that some of these guns and some of these grips become far more slick when your hands are covered in fluids, whether that's, you know, blood or otherwise, right? So his point was, hey, use some dish soap and try it that way. And when you do, you'll find that it is much, much harder to hold on to that gun, you know, effectively, to make yourself as capable as you would be under more ideal circumstances. I'm not saying you should go out and coat your hands in dish soap necessarily, but maybe you should. If you want to give it a shot, I would honestly love that. I would love it if one of you guys went out and tried that and came back and reported your findings. Like, hey, we did a whole handgun range day, Austin, and we used like 5 bottles of Dawn dish soap. I'd be like, that's weird. Are you sure that's all you used it for? But no, I'm just kidding. And if one of you guys, I swear to God, if one of you guys messages me and says you guys went with the baby oil for funsies, never again. Straight to jail. But you can change your environment. Environmental changes are certainly a way to augment what you're doing without kind of changing maybe the core skills you're working on. You can also tweak some of the drills. So it can be anything you want. It can be as simple as running it backwards. And guys don't think about that. They're like, oh yeah, I could flip the pattern. So instead of running, you know, side to side and forward, maybe we're doing side to side and backward or whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. Or you can modify time and round limits. You can add more rounds. You can remove rounds without changing the drill itself necessarily. Like the operator readiness drill is one that gets bastardized and cut apart and manipulated more than almost anything else out there, and I'm certainly guilty of that. I've been on the range and we go, hey, instead of doing like 10 rounds of rifle and 10 rounds of handgun, reloading 2 and 2, how about we do like 5-5, 1-1 or something, you know? And okay, yeah, and that way you can get twice as many repetitions in, but you're still working on, for the most part, the core competencies, the core skill sets that you wanted to touch on before. Or you can do it, maybe it's one-handed or weak-handed, or instead of an A zone, you're doing a reduced A zone on the target. You can add and manipulate the constraints of the drill, of the exercise itself, to help push whatever skill set or whatever principle of performance you're trying to build on. So if it's accuracy, maybe you reduce your A zone. You just draw a little black line across the middle of the A zone and go, hey, top half of the A zone hits only. We're pushing for accuracy today. And then you start to understand that there's a correlation with accuracy and time standards, and you try to, you know, do your best to meet the time standard while trying to meet the accuracy standard, and you start to understand some things, right? Here's one thing I will also add to this, that it's probably going to be somewhat unpopular with some people, and that's why I feel it compelled to make sure I call this out. And that is, you can modify and shake up your training via accountability. I can hear it now, guys going, what the fuck are you talking about? The target doesn't lie. We're accountable all the time. We're always accountable. What are you talking about? Training partners need to hold each other accountable. So we had Rick Hogg on recently, 2 weeks ago, from Warhog Tactical. You guys go check out that recording. It was a great discussion with Rick. But talking about line breaks, that came up, right? So, hey, you shoot this A zone and you hit it like dead nuts on the line of the A zone to the Charlie, you know, between the Alpha and Charlie. Is that a hit? And Rick goes, you know, he's telling the story about how he talks to his law enforcement guys and goes, listen, I don't care either way. You guys tell me, do you count it or do you not? And they talk about, you know, well, when we qual, they count it. And he goes, okay, fine, then we count it. But he goes on with, you know, the officer or the trooper in that scenario and goes, hey, that's fine, but I'll tell you this, you're responsible for every round that goes downrange. And if you wing a guy, the arm, you know, the outside of the arm, while it's fleshy, is not a bullet trap. Center of the body is a bullet trap. You know, arms and stuff, not a bullet trap. So if you're winging them, if you're basically counting that line break as a clean hit, you're building yourself for a lower standard of accountability. So I know there are some guys out there that they don't count line breaks. Either it's in or it's not. If it's a line break, if part of the impact is out, then the whole thing's out. Or I guess if it's like, if more of that puncture is outside than it is in, something like that, then you don't count it. Because of that, you want to be more accountable. The other thing you can do as well is introduce shot timers, guys. And this, it's so crazy to me that in 2025, as popular as shot timers are in the shooting community, as popular as people like Lucas Botkin. You know, and some people love him, some people hate him, but as popular as Lucas has made shot timers for people, right? I never wanted to train with one. I never wanted to. It was like when I got into music, I was so hesitant to embrace working with a metronome because it doesn't lie and it doesn't give a shit about your feelings. It doesn't. Hey, I'm having a really bad day today. I'm really tired. I'm kind of sore from the gym last night. Shot timer don't care. Shot timer don't give a fuck, right? So, you know, hey, if you can't beat that par time, that 2.5 or whatever it is, yeah, that sucks. But hey, you need to meet that. Same thing with music, right? Like the metronome doesn't lie. You can't play in time. You can't play in time. You got to work on it until you can. Those devices don't lie, but they keep you accountable. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, who the fuck is out here not using shot timers? And I will tell you, there are guys out there and they do, or they consider what they do to be training, and they don't have a shot timer. They'll go out there, they'll run drills, and they are 110%. They are out there focused on accuracy only. And it's like, okay, I get it. Like, accuracy is important because round accountability is paramount, especially as, you know, armed and concerned citizens. Round accountability has to be huge. Excuse me. It has to be a huge part of what we do, and it has to be a huge part of what we train for, right? There's no two ways around that. But you have to be able to produce and perform those skills, that skill set, right, under stress in a requisite amount of time. So maybe that's something like the Tueller drill, right, where it's, I think it's like 7 yards or something in 1.5 seconds, drawing from concealment or a holster, I guess. It could be outside the waistband. And putting a round on the A zone of the target in 1.5 seconds or less. There's a reason why we have time hacks and these performance metrics that we measure ourselves to. And it's in, hopefully in most cases, it is driven off of real life, real world experiences or gunfights or real life data that's extrapolated and then applied back to these defensive standards that we're trying to build for either law enforcement or armed civilians or a combination of both. A lot of times you'll see these drills and they're just like kooky, wacky shit that's thrown together with random par times of 7.8 seconds to get, you know, 10 rounds, but you got to do you have a mandatory reload somewhere in the middle of it. It's like, what is that training me for? I mean, I guess, yes, I'm getting repetitions, but is there data driven behind it? Maybe there is. I don't know. I literally just made that up off the top of my fucking head. So please don't chastise me too hard or read too far into it. But my point is that we do have people out there that aren't training with shot timers, and we do have people out there promoting that it's acceptable not to train with a shot timer. They'll look out there with a stopwatch and, you know, I had a good friend that took me out to the range, and I think it was 10 rounds at 10 yards in 10 minutes or something. And I'd never heard of it before. And, you know, so I mean, I did it, and I think I, you know, maybe didn't get everything in exactly the center of the B8, but, you know, obviously all 10 hits on paper. And I certainly welcomed, it was a change for me. It was me changing up my training mindset. So still a good day, still a good perspective shift for me. But I think if that's how, and that's not, and it definitely isn't to rag on that individual, to be clear, because if you're not doing that every time, you're fine. But if that is the only way you're training, I think you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. Just as, you know, if you're doing 50 reps with the shot timer and you're missing your time hack and you're missing your accuracy, maybe there's other things you need to stop and break down and work on. Because at that point, if you do 50 reps in a row failing a drill, you're probably in a rut of some variety, albeit a smaller one maybe, and you need to stop and break down. What am I having fucking issues with here that after 50 attempts, like imagine this, if you have one box of 9mm ammo, right? Yeah, one box. So that's 50 rounds. And the drill you're working on is a draw from the holster at 10 yards and putting one round to the A zone. And you go through that entire box, all 50 reps, all 50 rounds, and you don't hit that, you don't accidentally hit that A zone one time. You have some bigger problems, right? You know what I'm saying? So hopefully this makes some amount of sense to you guys. You can also shake things up by changing kind of, you know, the way you're approaching things. Maybe the answer is a low budget fix. I know there's a lot of guys out there that don't make time for dry fire. It is a absolutely essential part of your development. If you guys don't believe me, I would urge and recommend everybody, if you're listening to this, you find yourself in a rut on the range where you're just not able to keep up. We talked about this with Garrett from RAS Group a couple weeks ago when he was on. You're drawing and you're working on your split times, right? You're really trying to crush your split times, whether it's the rifle or a pistol. Maybe crushing the split time isn't the biggest area of opportunity you can focus on. Maybe it's your draw stroke. If your split is still 0.18 and you're trying to get it, you know, you're trying to shave time overall, getting below 0.2 is tough. Getting below 0.16 to 0.18 is really, really freaking hard. And only the top shooters in the world, I think, are really able to perform that way, right? With pretty high-end guns. So then your question is, well, then how do I shave time off? It's the draw stroke. It's the sight picture. It's your presentation and grip, right? How do you fix that? Dry fire. You fix it with dry fire. And that is something that a lot of guys don't want to hear because a lot of people think that you only get better at shooting by shooting. Just not true. There's a lot of ways that you can address it. Some of them don't even involve using a literal firearm. Sometimes it's just processing drills. We had Rob Epifania, who's a grandmaster, right? Rob was on talking about processing drills and things to make your brain sharper, faster, more flexible, right? Which is a huge part of competition shooting. And that doesn't involve a firearm. It doesn't. It involves your mind, completely and purely your mind. And the more flexible, the more reactive, the stronger you strengthen your mind to be, the better off you're going to be. And that's you know, on and off the flat range. But obviously, I think that's something that a lot of people look at shooting and they don't always think of crap like that. They don't think that stuff applies because it doesn't involve a firearm. It's not distinctly and strictly pulling a trigger, you know, working on sight picture, one of the quote unquote core principles. So there's a lot of ways you can shake things up. And I think you'd be very, very surprised with how much you grow in just applying dry fire to your practice. You know, hey, I work on these drills. Okay, so take the core parts of each one of those drills and make those into dry fire reps and set yourself a weekly routine. You do it for 20 minutes every other day. And watch, as long as you're putting in regimented practice and you're holding yourself accountable, you're not just drawing and pulling the trigger as fast as you can, right? You're waiting to get that good sight picture, just like you would on the range, right? You're just doing it dry. When you get back out to the range the next weekend, I think you would be genuinely surprised with the consistency and the improvement that you find. And, you know, this whole thing, right? The ruts, the problems, the blockers, the roadblocks, the stumbles, you know, whatever we want to call it, right? It's not just physical. The mental piece of this, I mean, it's all tied together, to be sure, I think. But your mindset, your attitude as you approach the range and things, they affect your performance hugely. I think that maybe there's some things you could probably do in that realm to help position yourself better for success. I sound so corporate when I say that, but you know, if you are heading to the range and you talk to your buddies, you do everything right. And hey, so we have it planned out. We're going to work on this drill and this drill and this drill. And you're the worst shooter in your group, which I think that's a good thing because then if you're surrounded by better shooters, you have the greatest opportunity of the entire group to improve yourself. Right. So maybe that's a good thing. But then they're talking about 3 out of the 7 drills they're working on, maybe 5 out of the 7 drills they're working on, you don't like. And it's because you suck at it. Maybe they're talking about doing offhand shooting. Maybe they're talking about doing speed reloads and or whatever, right? And you are just, you're worked up. You're nervous about it. You got some anxiety going as you're driving to the range. You're just thinking about, man, I really hope I don't fuck up. Man, I really hope I don't fail today. Man, I really hope I have a good day. And the whole time you're like, you're overthinking it, you're mentally burning yourself out, and you're trying to chase this idea of perfection that isn't realistic for anyone, and you're not just acknowledging the fact that everybody had to struggle a little bit before they were able to get better. That's just being real, right? And by the time you get to the range, your mind is so shot from the anxiety, from the worry, from the stress that you're not worried. Let me rephrase that. You're not thinking about the drill. You're not thinking about the repetitions. You're not thinking about getting better. You're thinking about not making a mistake. Think about that for a second. You're thinking about not making a mistake. Not, I don't want to make a mistake on this drill right here. I need to do it good. I need to do this, this, and this. You're just thinking about not making a mistake. And then it's almost becoming this self-fulfilling prophecy where you do. And then you have a really bad range date because you approach everything from the point of, I can't fail because then I'm going to look bad or I'm going to feel bad or my anxiety, right? And then you go out the next weekend with your buddies because you want to redeem yourself. And man, I can't be like last weekend. I can't do it like last weekend because that was terrible and they made some fun of me and they mocked my stance or whatever mistake I made, or, you know, I didn't seat the mag all the way and it fell out of the gun. I can't do that again. And then you get up and you're even more worked up than you were the last time. And guess what happens? You fuck up again because you are so concerned with just not making a mistake, not looking bad, not having an error. You're not actually putting the mental calories into what really matters, which is just, I don't want to say going through the motions, but just do the thing. Try to block out the noise. Try to relax. And I say it is way easier said than done because, and I talked about this when we went out to the range this past weekend, half the time I get up to the firing line and I know the drill. You know, it's usually not something hard. It's usually like two or three rounds to the A zone, right? But I'm just there. I'm waiting for that buzzer, and the buzzer goes off, and it's a total freak out. Like, I struggle to keep myself calm and composed and in a place mentally where my mindset is even keel. You know, like, I think about it as like the top of a pond, right? Where it's just a sheet of glass, right? Maybe a gentle ripple that's just your breathing, right? That's what I try to think about and trying to be smooth and calm and approach these things in an even way that's going to allow me to react and respond mentally in the ways that I want to. So yes, beep. Okay. So I'm replying and responding mentally and physically to the B of the beep, not the P of the beep, right? And I'm indexing the pistol correctly and I'm drawing and I got the barrel up safely. And then I'm thinking fingers, palms, elbows as I push out and present, and I'm pushing out and I got a good wrist angle here because I run a Glock. And so I have to have that slightly rolled down to make sure I get that grip angle presented correctly. And I find that dot and I pick that dot up for the target and I'm able to break that round where I want it to be. And a lot of the times I just go on autopilot. Like, I just full transparency. You guys can rip me up one way and down the other. I hope you do. But I would also say, if you're going to rip me on it, I would like full acknowledgement that you don't do the damn same thing. Especially when you're hanging out with your buddies, no matter how much we try to not, it is very, very difficult to not let your ego creep into what you're working on and what you're doing. That's a maturity thing that, again, it takes a little bit of something to get you away from thinking about that with things. And there's no shame in it. I'm not saying you should feel like total garbage, but at the same time, that in itself can end up being a major contributing factor to the rut that you end up in. Hey, we go out to the range, the same two or three of us or five of us, whatever it could, you know, may be, every time we go to the range, and every time all it ends up being is one guy wanting to have the fastest time at every drill. He's got to take 7 reps to make sure that he gets the fastest time of the day. And that ends up creating a rut because he's doing the same thing as he's spinning his wheel over and over and over and over and over again until he can just get that best time. And meanwhile, he doesn't even realize how he's adversely impacting the team around him. Hey, man, you're not going to be the best every day. It's okay. Hey, you got beat on a couple exercises. It's not a big deal. You know who's going to remember that in 2 weeks? Probably nobody. Like, it's not that big of a deal, especially if you're really in a positive training group, positive training environment where the focus is not to beat each other, but to lift each other up. To me, if there's somebody who's faster than me, that just means that they know something I don't. And the fact that we're training together means that I have access to some information that I don't have, but they clearly do because they're able to do it better, faster, more proficient, more accurately than I am. And that's good for everybody, right? So it's really, it really kind of is this exercise of mental flexibility, and to an extent it's perspective, right? Like, when I was doing music, I used to always think about it or try to frame it in a positive way, you know, instead of saying, hey, I'm the least experienced guy here, or I'm the youngest guy here, or I was on the end of the snare line, so I was the worst player. I would look at it like, well, hey, I actually think I'm pretty good. So what I started doing for myself was looking at it like, hey, if I'm this good and I'm the worst one here, that means I directly control how good or bad we are as a group. So if I'm taking care of all my shit, I'm practicing, you know, in between rehearsals, and when I show up, we're on fire. That means that I have direct control over, like, if we're talking ceiling being the top of your performance zone or performance level, right? And your basement being the lowest level of your performance capability or ability. I have direct control over that basement. That basement can be as deep or as shallow as I decide, because I am, quote unquote, the worst player or performer there. The same concept can very easily be taken and applied into your training group and your training circle, that, hey, if I'm quote unquote the worst one here, I now have control. It's a crazy thing, right? I have control over how good or bad this group can be. Because if I can raise the level of what bad, quote unquote, bad is, we become a pretty awesome training group and a pretty awesome group of performers, of capable individuals. If I'm the worst that we are, based off of where I decide I'm going to let my proficiency be. And when you change that, you have that mental flexibility, you have that more positive perspective, frame of reference, mindset about you, you'll find that things become a lot more enjoyable and you start knocking down more of those mental walls. You're not worried about beating the last guy or beating the next guy or having a good showing. If you're able to kind of laugh off some bad reps and things like that and just take some of the feedback that you get from guys in stride, cool. You stay positive. You're not sweating the small stuff. You're not getting hung up on the minutiae of competition, and instead you're able to focus on just simple improvement. And it is, it's simple, improving, it is simple. You want to get better, whatever that looks like, and in whatever ways or way that could be. If that means that you shave a tenth off of your draw stroke consistently, or a half a second off your draw stroke, or you find a way about thinking about things, or you find a new feeling and sensation of how you mount the gun based off of somebody explaining something to you differently, that's incredible. Those feelings are the ones that everybody lives for and everybody searches for, that those, you know, aha moments where you go, holy shit, I can't believe I never thought about that this way before. And then you're all of a sudden excited. You're reinvigorated with this positive energy that you want to carry forward. And now it's like you just climbed out of this rut and you're ready to hit the road again. You're ready to put the pedal to the metal and start moving forward again. And it's exciting. And it's something that I think that we all kind of understand as I'm saying it, right? Like, I know what you're talking about, Austin. I've been through those moments. I've been through those experiences. I know exactly the feeling you're talking about. It's like when I first figured out, you know, one of the secrets, you know, or the secret sauce or whatever to me personally being able to do reloads faster, or site presentation, you know, where you're not fishing around for the dot anymore in the optic window, or maybe something that you figured out with aligning your iron sights, if you're still running handgun irons because that's just what you want to do. Like, totally cool. It is something that I think so many of us chase, and it gets harder and harder the longer you go, because those aha moments get harder and harder to come by the longer you do this, because the easy ones, the low-hanging fruit, right? It's easy to pick those bad boys off, but as you get better, things go higher and higher and higher. It's harder to come by, which is why you see the guys who are really, really good shooters put in so much time to hone their craft and improve themselves, because they know as you get better, and they're already really fucking good, as you get better, you got to work that much harder for those moments. And when you do find them, it's a big level up at that point. So, you know, the mental piece, the positive perspective, the positive attitude, it's very easy to sit here and say that, especially me. Those of you guys that are listening that have talked to me and that know me, you're probably laughing, because I'm not usually a sunshine and rainbows and unicorn farts type of individual. I do have a tendency to be pessimistic. I do look at the negative side of things pretty often, but I do acknowledge the power of it. You know, I approach my range days with a positive frame of mind. I really do. I try to go out there. I try to always have a good time. I'm not out there to fight with anybody. I'm not out there to, ooh, you got a line break, don't count it, or hey, whatever. Like, I'm not usually out there to eat your lunch, you know, and quibble over tenths of seconds on times and be super competitive. I want to get better and I want to have a good time. I will say, the only time I will make sure I definitively and for sure go out of my way to be an a-hole to somebody on the range, is for safety. And I don't think that even needs to be said, but it can also not be overstated enough, is that if you're unsafe on the range, like everybody should be climbing up your ass to let you know about it. And if you're one of those people that are so negative on the range, you're so worried about focusing on not having your fragile ego stepped on, that you can't handle being told that you did something wrong that endangered the safety of the men or women around you, then you have no business doing any of this stuff. You need to totally take a step back and reevaluate for what purposes and what reasons you're out here doing it. Because that shit goes on, and we've had to do it. I had to be that guy that dismissed somebody from our group because of safety concerns and safety considerations. And the fucked part is we started our range day with a safety brief. But it's an omnipresent thing. Safety never goes away. Safety is never something that you're going to be completely mastered on. Safety is never going to be something that you can't just, you know, do it once and hang it up. It's an always and a forever. Now, that said, we went through a whole bunch of stuff today, and just to reemphasize this, you guys, breaking habits it's not easy. So don't get too wound up on beating yourself up for not being able to fix problems or deviate from some stuff that you've been doing for a really long time. There is some crazy number or statistic or something out there, some data point, because he used to talk to us about this again. Go back to my time, teaching music and as a performing musician. I had a high school director who was really great for these random nuggets of information. I was like, man, where the fuck does this stuff come from? Does he just like read a shitload of books or magazines? Which I don't think I ever got the answer to that. But and I ended up working with the man for like 8 years as an instructor later on. But something like, it only takes 3 repetitions to start building a habit. After three consecutive repetitions, the neural pathways in your brain start to build and start to form. So after 3 repetitions, in actual scientific accuracy, 3 repetitions starts building a habit. Now, the more you do that, right? So if you go to 7 or 10 or 30, right? The stronger that neural pathway gets, and you're building that, you know, what we refer to as muscle memory, right? But on the flip side of that, it doesn't take 3 to break a habit. It takes like 28, something crazy like that, which it's like, so if you do your multiplication there, it is like 9 times as many repetitions are required, something crazy like that, to break a habit. So it is immensely more difficult to break bad habits than it is to build good ones. So if throughout this entire process, we're talking about trying to get out of these ruts, break these bad habits, and it doesn't just happen magical for you the first time, stick with it. Get back out to the range. Make sure you follow up and schedule it. We were out at the range this weekend. There was 4 or 5 of us that were out there all together, right? We ran some drills, got some zeroing done, things like that, did some handgun work and some accuracy work and stuff. Cool. Hey, do you have ideas for the next group range day? You know, me and Josh were talking. Yep. Hey, cool. All right. Well, let's get it out there. Get home. Get on the Discord. Hey, we were talking about this. We'd like to get on the books. So not even a full 2 weeks later, we're going to be back out there. And here's one way that, you know, we're going to be able to shake things up is being a little bit more focused with how we present those large group range days. And that's by just focusing the particular skill set, which is, hey, we're going to be going out there, we're going to be doing a GPR range day, which sounds a little bit corny, a little bit stupid, but in concept, what it's going to be, because we have some of these bays that are a little bit more limited to be able to fit all the parking and things that we need for guys and moving around and shooting while still having berms on 3 sides of us for safety, obviously. So what we're going to do is, you know, obviously it's going to be focused more on like LPVOs and magnified optics, like a 4X or a 6X or an 8X with either a piggyback red dot or something like that, or piggybacked irons or offset 45, something like that, where maybe we're shooting diagonally across the bay, but still into one of the berms. So you kind of, you know, that A squared plus B squared plus C squared, the good old Pythagorean's theorem, to maximize distance. But then we're going to include some prone positions. We're going to do some smaller gong targets and things. So instead of the 8-inch gong that we're used to shooting at, maybe we go down to like a 4-inch or something like that, where you have to use a little bit of magnification. We're going to use some of the Jawless Hog tactical paper targets that they send out to us, where we're going to take a drill that we use on the range regularly, where we have the shooter with their back to the target, and on the beep, you give them like a number and letter combo, and that target has like some different shapes and stuff with numbers and letters on it, and they have to put two rounds in each one of those. So, you know, like, you know, C4, so they find the C, two rounds, find the four, two rounds. Well, now what we're going to do is that same thing, except it's going to be at like 70 yards. So on the beep, they're going to turn around, they're going to get their combination. As they're hunting through their scope, they're going to put two rounds in each one. On safe, get up, sprint to the target, and then maybe, I don't know, do like a bill drill into the silhouette that's in the center of the target or something like that. I don't know. But we're taking that core concept and those core drills that we apply, you know, at 7 and 15 yards on the range to a much greater distance with a different skill set, where you're going to have to transition from your magnified optic run up and use your red dot, whether it's on an offset or a piggyback, whatever have you, or maybe you get to a target and you crank down, and we'll build that into the drill. Hey, if you're running a dot with a magnifier, you need to flip that magnifier out of the way when you get up to the target, because realistically at 7 yards, you're not going to be using it. You know, whatever the case may be, and force people to run drills that way. So you can get more creative with it, you can be more focused with it. Maybe we'll do a range day for the larger group of guys where we draw from concealment for everything. Like, it'll be a concealed carry range day. We're only shooting handgun, and every draw, everything has to come from concealment. That might be a little bit, you know, tougher, because we'll probably want to evaluate everyone's ability to draw safely from concealment. There's definitely some safety factors that come into mind there, but that would be a great one to build into it, because it allows you to have that larger group range day while putting a little bit of a tighter scope, a smaller frame of reference, if you will, right, onto what exactly it is that you want to talk about, the skill sets you want to highlight. And then it keeps things fresh. It keeps things interesting for guys who go, hey, man, we just did the same shit three of these in a row. Why am I going to keep showing up? I could go out and go with a different group of guys, go do different things, which I think is kind of a shitty attitude, but I certainly understand it. So, hey, keep things moving, keep things fresh and new. And then you have these new concepts. Hey, we can do GPR work. We can do handgun only. We can do carbine only. We can do concealed carry only. And then you can even do more, right? We change environmental factors. I know the November range day we did last time, we brought out like a 40-pound sandbag, and then we brought out a ladder that you had to shoot through, and you had to carry the sandbag. So you're giving yourself additional environmental factors that are going to change what you're doing, because they're either going to make it more demanding on how you position yourself to shoot. If you're shooting around a ladder, through a ladder, or through a barricade, right? Something like the Viking Tactics, the VTAC barricades. Excuse me. That's a tough one, and that's an environmental change. You could also do it at night if you have access to somebody's property and you take all this stuff and you put it to white light. Or if you're really fancy, really high speed, really operator, you can do it with night vision. And I know I make the jokes and just said all the dumb shit there, but like, honestly, if you can do this, if you have a location where you're able to safely and legally shoot with night vision, where you can work on passive aiming and lasers, and then maybe, you know, get the nods off and do white light too, to further evaluate some of this stuff, that's an incredible opportunity. It's really, really awesome. And it takes some of the base things that you probably work on all the time, but it helps get out of that rut where you can identify, hey, I can work on this now instead. Or at the very least, like, it reaffirms, hey, this is why it's important that I work on a strong presentation, or why the muscle memory needs to be there. So when I close my eyes and I raise that rifle up to my eye, or I present that handgun and optic or handgun and irons up to my eye, it's on target every time. But if it's not, hey, I need to go back and I need to address, you know, through dry fire or through my individual range practice, whatever it is, hey, I need to keep working on this. This is still important. I haven't mastered it in the way that I thought I would, because once I got under low light and I had to manage a white light, whether it was handheld or not, you know, I started having some real issues with it. Okay, cool. Now I know I can keep working on this. I can get better at it, and it's really going to shine through when I go to reapply this in a couple months' time or a couple weeks' time to the next night vision shoot or white light shoot, or, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, this is stuff like everybody falls into these ruts, and I'll tell you, it can even be something where you're struggling to knock the rust off after, you know, the winter. Here in Michigan, we do not get out and shoot near as much as we want to in the winter. We had one night vision shoot this year. We did a standards day in December, which was super cold. It was like 23 out, and we were doing standards, which most of us passed at least a majority of the drills and everything. but it was not ideal. Like, you would never want to take somebody out and have them do performance standards in the cold, but we did it because we're idiots here in Michigan, and that's just what we do. It was actually my idea, so I am the king of the idiots, if we're being completely candid. But, you know, we are... I'm sitting here calling myself the king of idiots, and I'm actually reinforcing the point by forgetting my train of thought and my line of thinking here. But, you know, oh, that's what it was. It's super fucking cold out. So we take a lot of time off, you know, whereas in like September and October, maybe we're getting out to the range, you know, every other weekend, maybe 3 out of 4 weekends in some instances, if we're really lucky. You get to December with the holidays and the bad weather, and then definitely fucking January. You maybe go to the range and get to shoot 1 time in 2 months. And then even, maybe it's 2 times in 3 months if you count one trip out in February, which I'm pretty sure that's what I did. I think I went once a month across those. I did once to Steve's for the night vision shoot in January, once in February to do some ammo testing. That video is on YouTube, by the way. If you guys haven't checked out our YouTube channel, please head on over and subscribe. It helps me out tremendously if you guys subscribe, check out the videos, leave a comment, and tease the engagement monster. But we did that. December, we had the standards day. And then, yeah, this past weekend was the first time I've been out in March. So we're going to be out again in March. It'll be the first time of 2025 I do two range sessions in a single weekend. And that's, I think every other weekend's a good cadence to try and stick to if you can. I know ammunition's expensive. I know it's not always super easy. But if you can do at least once a month, I think you're in good shape. Twice a month, I think you're in really good shape. But getting out of that winter hibernation, so to speak, right? That in itself is a rut that needs to be gotten out of. Yeah, Jesus, I'm struggling with my English today. So it's something that regardless of your skill level, how many years you've had in the game, so to speak, because some people, you know, you have that false sense of security where like, well, I've been shooting for 15 years. Dude, so what? Who the fuck cares? You can still learn something new. And more often than not, the guys that want to tout how long they've been shooting, not what they've done or who they've learned from or what they do. Like, most guys who are actual shooters, like, they really won't throw the experience thing at you. They won't throw like the military service thing at you. I've had enough conversations with guys who've done like some legit shit. They're not going to sit there and throw their resume at you because it's just a fucking piece of paper. They'll let their skills speak for themselves on the range. But I digress. Like, all those people, the top tier operators out there with military experience in the decades realm, and guys who've only been doing it a couple of years, like, everybody gets in those ruts. And it's important to try and find a way to fight our way out of it, to overcome those obstacles, to be better for it. Because the next time around, the next rut you find yourself in, you'll be able to see it a lot sooner, a lot more clearly, and go, hey, I know what this is. I know what this looks like, and I'm going to fight my way out of it. And yep, cool, good man. Like, all right, I've seen this before. It sucks. I don't like it, but I know how to get out of it. It's time to put the work in. Time to get myself back in fighting shape, if you will, for the next time we go out and hit the range. So thank you guys so much for checking out this week's installment. Hopefully this is helpful. You know, I think that it's important to talk about this time of year as the weather's turning. We're able to get outside. The weather's finally warming up and everything. And here's the thing. We're finally in the opportunity. We have the chance now to just like start putting the seasonal depression behind us. You know, where we've spent so much time in front of screens day after day after day at work. We've put, you know, the holidays and the family drama and stuff, right? And the dark and cold weather, we're just indoors all the time. And seasonal depression's real. Like, I struggle with it. Like, the last couple of years, really, as I've gotten into jobs in my career and stuff that require me to work a lot more for a lot longer, it has gotten really, really difficult. And people that deny the existence of such a phenomenon are complete idiots. It's a real thing. Like, mental health is no joke. I think that we get a lot of people in this community talking about it, which is a good thing. I think we have a lot of people in this community that talk about mental health because everybody else is talking about mental health. They acknowledge it because it's the in vogue thing to do, but they don't actually have any kind of personal investment in it. They just want you to believe that they do. But mental health is super important. Even relatively I guess, inconsequential things as people see it as seasonal depression. It's not inconsequential. There's lives changed every day because of severe seasonal depression. So when we have the opportunity to get out and spend time with your friends at the range, like I did this weekend, even if it's just, you know, hey, some ready up drills. Yeah, we're doing a little bit of running around. Yeah, there's a lot of jokes. Yeah, there's smiles and laughs. And we finally got a little bit of sunshine at the end of the couple hours we were out there. It started off pretty gloomy and rainy. I was still just happy to be outside, you know, and again, the mental part of it, it's huge. It's so important. I can't even tell you how important that all is. So thank you guys for listening to this. And I hope that if you're dealing with something like that, like reach out to a friend, try and talk to somebody, or just get outside. You'd be surprised. A little vitamin D goes so far in helping you feel better. You may feel entirely different. Hey, before I felt like I was in such a bad place and I needed to talk to somebody, and you should. But man, I'll tell you, I've had those days where I feel so incredibly bad. And then just spending some time outside and breathing in some air that isn't filtered through your house and everything, it can be a real game changer, man. So appreciate you guys listening as always. That's all I got for you. We have actually next week's discussion is one I've been looking forward to for a while now. We actually pushed it out a month to make sure we had more information and more to talk about. Not gonna spill the tea just yet, but it's gonna be a good one. So thank you guys so much for hanging out this week. Appreciate all of your support. If you guys enjoyed this, please make sure that you hit the subscribe button, you hit the like button, or whatever on whatever platform you're listening to, whether it's Spotify or Podbean or Listen Notes or you know, whatever else. We actually just found out recently we're in the top 10% of podcasts via Listen Notes, which is really, really cool. It's not as cool as like Mr. Rick Hogg and the On the Range podcast. They're in like the top 2.5% of podcasts, but we're in the top 10%. That's so cool for having been around for not even a full 5 years yet. You guys, your patronage, your support, like everything, it means the absolute world to me. It's so cool, man. It's so cool. I hope what we're doing here really is helping you guys, and really is impactful. So that's all I got for you guys this week. Until next time, everybody, enjoy the weather as it warms up. Stay safe out there. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.